I'm Jenny Nevinson, but you can call me Penny Flymy. And you are listening to the Minder Podcast.
Welcome to the Minder Podcast in association with Minder.org. This is episode 2, which is part 2 of an interview with George Layton. I'm your host, Paul Stenning, and I'd firstly like to thank everybody who wrote to me from the last episode with George Layton and expressed how much they enjoyed it and enjoyed the interview. So thanks to everybody that did that. It's really good to see that already the right type of people, i.e. those who really want to hear about the ins and outs behind the scenes of Minder, are already beginning to discover the podcast and enjoy it. What did strike me, and probably not too surprising, but every message I received was from a male listener. So I do wonder whether there are any female listeners, or whether there will be. My wife, that's her indoors, informs me that George Layton is a silver fox. So I suspect there are many people who feel the same way, could well be listening to George right now, simply because of his divine looks. This is part 2 of the interview with George, and of course George is the actor, writer and author, voiceover artist, etc, etc. If you haven't listened to the first episode, please go back and listen to that first, and this second episode will therefore make a bit more sense as we continue our chat.
You know, I used to write Robbie's Best. I wrote 13 Robbie's Best. Mm-hmm. I was a very hard-working young man, you know. I didn't work harder. I think I just thought I was lazy. I still think I'm lazy, actually, because I could have done much more. But on Talking Pictures, I suddenly found they were showing some of my shows. I have to say, I thought they were bloody marvellous. I shouldn't say that.
You're,
I thought they were terrific.
I mean, I've got this as a kind of introduction on which you don't have to hear, but you know, the list that I've got in front of me of what I would say for the introduction is actually extraordinary. The things that you've been in just as an actor, and then the writing as well.
So that's the thing is I've got some reference books here, like the A to Z of situation comedy. I think I get more mentions than anybody because I've got the acting bit and the writing bit. So because I used to write on the buses, for instance. I mean, that's a long time ago.
Well, that's one of them. I mean, literally the shows, whether you've written them or acted in them, they are literally some of the best shows from the 70s, even 60s.
Thank you very much. I'm an unsung hero, aren't I?
I think so, actually. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying.
I think I should be ennobled at Buckingham Palace, services to situation comedy. I've also written 3 books, you know that.
I didn't until I looked more deeply.
Oh, here we are. Well, you're going to go off in a minute, aren't you? Hang on, let me see where my books are. These are, I have written, there's 3 of them actually, but they're all now published in one because my stupid publishers, Matt Millen, decided to do an anniversary edition. There's a long story to that, but there's 3 like that. There's another one. The Fib was written. It's been in print for 45 years, my book. 45, and it's still in print. Bloody amazing, I think. That's what I'm most proud of, I think. Anyway, I like all these compliments.
Well, one thing I was going to ask you about that is, nowadays, if a writer submits short stories to an agent, they tend not to be even looking for short stories from, unless it's someone who's written, say, 30 previous novels. How was it that you actually got that book published originally, with it just being different stories?
Well, shall we go to the next half an hour? It's away from Minder, though, isn't it? It's away from Minder.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end, I wanted to kind of, like I said at the beginning, I mentioned some of these things, but
the important thing about Minder for me is I'm filming, and I always use my people. I mean, people remind me, they say, oh, I used to sit in the corner of the room and I was all scribbling, or you did this, and, oh, you know, and it makes me feel really good because I think of myself highly, you know, lazy. I really, you know, but people do say, oh, God, you know, I met somebody who said, well, to the husband, why can't you be like George Lane, do a bit more work, you know, something like that. So I obviously was, I did graft hard, I did have a work ethic, but and so it's all to do with guilt. I didn't like, I mean, I could have been an actor who, when I wasn't working, joined others at the pub. And we know what happens to all of those. I can name so many who went down that line. Mm. Friends of mine, people I've worked with. I was an actor. I felt guilty about wasting time. I had to, you know, it was all about self. You know, I've got a little man syndrome. You know what I mean? I've got to be better than others. Not to a nasty degree. Don't get me wrong, Paul. But, you know, I didn't realize I had a God-given gift for writing. I mean, the blog, I walked away from writing. We'll talk about that in the next session. I walked away from it. I couldn't stand anymore. I said, oh, I think I mentioned it. I said, I stopped thinking about writing Don't Wait Up or anything. I stopped bloody getting tearful, a bit like the Boilers, you know. But I've also got an inbuilt sense of work ethic, I think. I have got a good work ethic, I think, but full of guilt because I waste so much time. So I'm not a workaholic. But I was doing things right with the blog. Is this still staying on? Are we all right?
Seems to be. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this blog thing, which has got me back to writing, I'm older, and it has got me back to writing. One good thing about the pandemic, I had this idea for a diary, which I sold to the Telegraph. And then it went from 1 to 4 to 7 weeks, and that was it. And then I thought, well, I'm going to carry on doing my own life in Laetonia. Are you ready? It's quite quirky. Some of them are quite serious. I have a good go at Boris, and a good go at, you know, things that I feel angry about. But I always try and do it with humour. So there's one of my blogs, I liken the government, the cabinet, particularly to a football team. You've got your first team players, your second team players, the substitutes. It's a very funny episode, a very funny blog. Anyway, I've been getting up sometimes. I'm lying awake at 3 in the morning. So I think, oh, I'm going to do something. I'm writing 3 till 5 in the morning. The only time I did that was when I had to do Doctor at the Top at very short notice. But other than that, I get up at 5, write for 2 hours, go back and listen to the news in bed and snooze, and then get up at 8:30. You know, I mean, I never used to do that, you see. I was never a I've always hated writing, really. Love-hate thing.
What do you prefer between kind of book books and TV?
About what, sir?
Between books and, TV, what would you prefer?
What I like about book is its last, you know, you write for TV and you put Saturday. I mean, that's the other thing. I never knocked a script off. I was never a writer, I'll do what you like, I don't care. I was so passionate about getting, I don't know why, I was with everything, I just think, I had to do the best I could, and it doesn't make you any happier, and often it's just forgotten. So, you know, the script goes into the ether, hopefully it gets repeated. I mean, I was really hoping that Don't Wait Up would be repeated over the pandemic, because I think there's a whole market of older viewers there, and younger viewers. So it's still, apart from the fashion, the thrust of it about NHS and you know, a GP and a private, divorce, because it's actually about divorce. You know, there's a long story how I got them to be doctors. It's the reason for that. But you know, it's so timely. And the only thing that gives it away is the early days of, you know, mobiles. You know, I was about that bloody big, you know, a car, even the car. It was all new. I mean, I wrote it in the, when did I write it? In 83, it first went out. And I did 39, and it stopped because I couldn't. I said, let somebody else to write it, and I'll do half of them. But they wouldn't do that. So scripts, all that work goes out, hopefully gets repeated. A book, not it. It lasts forever. And it's there, you can hold it. You know, and I'm often asked to talk about comedy writing. I never do all that, but I do go to schools and colleges and talk about short story writing because I think it's a completely different animal. It's not unlike a situation, you know, a half-hour thing, but I'm always doing that because a short story to me is like a round ball. It's like a ball and has a sort of shape to it. And my scripts are like that, actually. And I remember David Croft saying to me once, you know, well, you put in one bloody script, because it's a way of showing off, really. I mean, he said Jimmy and I would do about a series out of that, you know. And it's true. You know, I'd get an ending, and then I'd be clever and give a double ending, and maybe even another. You know, it was me showing off and trying to be too clever, I think, actually.
Yeah, well, just because a geezer's done well for himself don't mean to say you can rip him off, does it?
Oh, come on, Terry. I mean, he gave me 700 quid. Now, if I come across a nice BMW or something, well, that's your deposit straight away. I mean, where's the rip-off?
Yeah, he wants you running errands in my office hours. He's certainly got to pay.
Right, Arthur.
Yeah, all right. All right. I'm going to crash out.
Yeah.
Good night. No, I said I'm going to crash out.
Terry, turn it down. I mean, that shampoo has given me a real head.
You didn't have to work so hard.
Did you admire or do you admire the writing in Minder? Because...
Well, I did. Of course, and actually, remember something I wanted to say. I always wanted to try and hunt for a Minder script.
Mm.
All I got as far as the title.
That's where
I was too busy.
That's where I was going into this.
You know what the title was going to be of my script if I'd ever written it? Who Minds the Minder? I thought it was a good title. Who Looks After Dennis? Who Looks After Terry McGann? But I never pursued it. I don't think I even tried. I don't think even, you know, I never, I mean, the only reason I started writing Doctor in the House was I was in it, and I went to the producer, Humphrey Barclay, and I've got an idea for an episode. He said, I'll put it on paper. Why didn't I go and do that with... I think I was a bit frightened of the length, actually. I was always used to half-hour writing, you know.
Mm.
So, do you know what I mean? All my scripts have been in that sort of... Well, ITV is a 23 minutes, isn't it? Which is very hard. Who Minds the Minder? It would have been a bloody good title, wouldn't it?
Did you think
that's as far as I got?
So you didn't think of the scenery,
plot.
The plot. That's the word.
No, I just didn't pursue it. Didn't pursue it. Shame. Should have done. I tell you something. I'm going to tell you something now, Paul. That in a way, being versatile the way I have been has not helped my career. And I'm going to say this, and I hope Dennis doesn't take offence. You see, being versatile doesn't get you in that where you immediately think of me as something. Whereas Dennis has got a definite type, isn't he? You know, if you think of New Tricks, you think of Terry McCann, you think of, what was the Regan? Sweeney.
Yeah.
It was the Dennis Waterman role, wasn't it? And I think that's clever because it creates a niche for itself. I, in a way, was a bit too versatile. I could turn my hand to lots of things, but you didn't immediately think of me. I suppose... You know, I'm saying that. I mean, I wasn't good at those amoral characters, and I found a likeness between Vernon Potter in Robin's Nest and Paul Collier, and a little bit of theirs. I can't quite remember now. As I say, I don't dwell on watching my own shows very much. I never know when Minder's on, actually. And when I do see it's on, if I'm flicking channels, is it ITV3? I don't know, ITV4? It's never my episode, so I never see it. But I know when it's on because people send me tweets. Watching it today, George, you know, they love it. And they do. And that Sweeney must be on a hell of a lot. And of course, I do get confused between the two because it was used in films, the same whole team.
Mm-hmm. So when you first made the episodes, did you ever watch the first?
Oh, I watched it when it went out. Yeah. I mean, maybe hiding behind fingers occasionally, and I'd do that differently or whatever. Well, I didn't realize that was such a long shot or a close shot. Yeah, I'm not a great fan. I like watching my own writing more than watching my own performing. Isn't that interesting? I love watching things I've written. But it's so long ago, you know. It's a long time ago.
Can you remember anything in particular? I mean, given that, can you remember anything in particular that happened during filming that you still remember?
Well, what I do remember is this office I'm sitting in, this study of mine, I was filming while the builders were here doing this house up there I moved into. Now, I moved into this house in 1980. So, was I doing Minder? It must be Minder. When did Minder start?
79.
Yeah. So I bought that house. I think I was in Oliver. It was a tough time. And I was doing this house up. And this study that I'm in was the eaves. It was a glory hole. And it was only going to come to half. See where that peak is, that there behind me?
Mm-hmm.
It was only that size. And my wife said, because it was all to do with money, wasn't it? I said, you're mad. We're doing this much. Just open it out. And this has been this is where I've written all my scripts in the last, since 1980. Yeah. So I do remember filming Minder while I had all the problem dealing with house builders and all that. Now, what do I remember about? I don't know. I just loved doing it. I loved the part. I loved doing it, actually. And that's why I get really sad when I think I was so stupid to say, no, I'm not free for that particular episode, thinking, well, they're lost brothers. I think I had a mental bloody aberration. Well, I did. Because I wasn't thanked for it when I did it. Bloody killed directed the pantomime, I think. I think I did because I was free. I like directing. But anyway, we've gone back to that. I'm repeating myself.
Did anybody say to you at the time, you know, how come you're not in the show anymore? You disappeared from the screen. Did people say this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People say that all the time. Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I never knew how many I did. I thought maybe more than six, actually, if I'm really honest. It was clearly a character. It went into people's sort of, obviously, he's a nerve. What am I trying to say? People remember it so clearly.
Mm.
The fact it's only six is a compliment to the writing and to me, I think, really.
That was it.
Is he sweating?
Bricks does bricks. Muggs only got third-party fire and theft.
Good.
And the shunt was his fault, it now transpires.
Have you done the crash repair?
Yeah, just waiting on a new bonnet. I'll bell him in a couple of days and tell him I've got a punter who'll take it off him for a price and pay for the repairs. He'd be so relieved. He'd jump at $2,500.
Lovely. Well, I reckon my client will cough up five.
Well, that's all right then. Nice little drink up this weekend. Come on then, I'll show you.
Excuse me, Leroy. When's the bonnet coming?
They promised it for later this afternoon.
Very nice. Very nice. $55,000. He's been a bit restless, hasn't he? All motorway driving, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. And never in the wet.
Oh, no. Can you get me a new speedo?
No sweat.
All right, fair enough.
I'll have my whiskey vouchers now if it's all the same.
Yeah, well, I thought you might.
Because he was a good, rounded character. I think it's to do with the affection. All right. There were times when you think Dennis was going to bloody just break his neck, you know, chase after him. Do him over, but people liked that. It was a sort of a love-hate relationship, wasn't it? And it's the same, really, if you think of Dennis and George Coe, Terry and Arthur. It's not that big a house. It's a big house, but it's not that big. Why have I got two boilers? It's bloody unbelievable. I think the problem put them in about 25 years ago, had to get two to get rid of.
Well, do you at least feel quite gratified that you did buy your house when you did? Because obviously, prices these days compared to then...
Oh,
ridiculous.
I feel so... There's a lot I could talk about this. I feel sorry for younger people. We, children of the 60s, honestly, we were blessed. We were blessed. I bought my first house in 1967. Next door, funnily enough, was my neighbour was Glenn Edwards, who later was David Minder. He moved in next door to me. Isn't that funny? Yeah. He was a lovely man. And we were neighbours, and he was a great neighbour to have. I moved from there. I bought a huge house. I was way ahead of all my contemporaries. I mean, Mr. Sullivan, Dennis Waterman, look at this bloody big house that George Layton's bought. But then I got divorced, so I wasn't that clever, was I? but then I started again, and I didn't like this house when I first moved here. It's nothing to do with my dad, but I've always had Victorian houses, period houses, and this is all like a 20s. And between you and me, I bought it from Graham Garden, one of the goodies.
Mm.
But my darling wife, who I adore, as you can see, could see the potential. She sent me about the next day to look at my own. I thought, yeah, they're all very nice 20s, you know, it's a very solid house, good proportions, not this office, this is my garret. And so it was a very good move, but it was hard starting again, but it's nice to share a house with the wife you get on with.
Yes.
I think we've been very, very lucky. And the other thing I've written about is that, you know, the pandemic has made very little difference to me as an actor. I mean, I'm not in demand, or I'm very, you know, I've been my favourite job in recent years was doing EastEnders. I loved it, you know, up the road, bloody marvellous, back every night, fantastic, sometimes back in the middle of the day. And I love being in EastEnders, and I really wish they'd bring my character back. I love it. But sadly, I think it's going to happen. And I loved that. I loved the whole crowd there. I think the work ethic was amazing. I mean, this is what, when did I do it? 2012, I think, 2012.
Mm.
And I just loved being there. It was my dream job from the point of view is, you know, up the road. Amazing. They sent a car for me. I didn't negotiate. Oh, my agent didn't use it. I think it's because I was a bit old. I don't know. Anyway, I didn't complain. So we went up there, did my stuff. Enjoyed it very, very much. And I would love to do that kind of thing again. But what I'm, my long-winded way trying to say is that how would I have felt? I've done Oliver twice, actually. One of my favourite musicals. I love the part of Fagin. I did it in 1979 for a year at the old Sean Kenny set, which is the original set which Ron Moody starred in. And then I did at the Palladium in the Sam Mendes production, again for Cameron Mackintosh. Now, how would I have felt, say, in 1995, open at the Palladium, and a week later, pandemic, all theatres are closing.
Mm.
I hope I wouldn't have slashed my wrist, but I think I would have been destroyed. And I've written about this. I feel so sorry for younger people. I've actually tweeted about, you know, I know very, very fine actresses and actors who are Hermes deliverers. You know, it makes me cry. It makes me so upset. And I'm lucky. It's come at the fag end of my career. You know what I mean? It doesn't make a difference to me, but for young people, my son-in-law is a very well-known musician. He's had a bloody tough time, you know, and, well, I'll tell you who he is. I mean, why not? I mean, I don't write about, well, I haven't. I don't write about my family as much as my work, but he's Bearded Man. Do you know Bearded Man?
I know the name.
Yeah, very successful, but, you know, he can't go to his festivals, he can't go on tour. You know, he's done very well. My daughter's an agent for stand-up comics. Not easy for her, is it? But she's sons are getting the work. But, I just feel so sorry for them all. I really do. I mean, it hasn't made... There's elements of lockdown I've quite enjoyed, actually. Getting back to writing and having... You know, and it wasn't for money, I assure you. I've always written for... Maybe that's the key to it. I've always written for money. not so much the book. I mean, we went to talk about how I got published, didn't you? They're very much from my heart and my own childhood. They're not autobiographical, but the setting is. But, you know, obviously I write because I want to write, but, you know, I didn't do it for free. It was a very important part of my life of, you know, being able to have two careers going in tandem, so I was not really out of work. And as I say, I'd rather do that than, turn to drink while I'm out of work.
So where is the bleeding car, then?
Well, I told you. I had to ditch it. And a bit sharpish and all.
Oh, I see. So you get a car with 700 quid of his money and then ditch it. That's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it was only the deposit. I'm really sorry, Jack.
That's all right, Des. I understand. In case there are, sir,
yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, you might be leaving us, Oily.
Leave out the Oily, will you?
Jack's thinking of going back to Spain, Arthur.
And we now know he's Barassic. So my idea is we get all of what's left of his cash and get him down to London Airport Toot Suite.
You just reminded me of something when you said about... you just mentioned something that made me think of your... Sort of when you were growing up, because I noticed on Twitter you were And you were showing photos of Bradford as it used to look. So I was wondering, do you still feel somewhat yearning for home? Do you think about it visiting?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I said this the other day, that I left... My parents were refugees, right? They could have gone anywhere. In many ways, I've met Americans who think, oh, you feel so American in here. I can imagine what I would have been like if they'd gone to America. They'd been a right bloody New York, you know, sport. But I was very lucky. They gravitated to Bradford. I was the first member of my family to be born in Bradford. And if you read my stories, I think, Vincey, this sound like you and your family, mid-European and all that. I mean, you think of 10th generation Yorkshireman, they're very Yorkshire-based. Yeah, right. And I loved growing up in Bradford. I loved it. Remember your question again? What was the question?
Just, do you still visit it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what I was saying to him is that I left Bradford in 1960 to go to drama school. I was useless at school. I went to Barada, and I still now, what's that, 96, that's about 60 years ago, is it?
Yeah.
I still think of Bradford as home. There's nobody there anymore, but I still call Bradford home. I still, and I've got a great affection for Bradford. I was very lucky several years ago to be on the committee for the City of Film designation. And so I had to go up to Bradford to have meetings. I just love going back there. It's not the Bradford I remember, but certainly... He's still got that look. He's in a valley. He used to cycle out and get the bus out. He'd be on the moors in half an hour, 40 minutes. Fantastic. Bailden Moors, Ilkley Moors. So I love that. I didn't like school, but I love growing up in Bradford. And in fact, my best friend, who I grew up with, referred to as mate in my blogs, we still see each other. We live near each other. So that's nice, isn't it? And so many years later.
From the beginning to the end, I was just going to ask you what's in your... Can you, with the way things are, can you see what you're going to be doing next? Do you plan for things at all, or are you just kind of taking things more
Well, I have actually been documented saying, you see me trying to write a situation comedy, just shoot me. I've got some good ideas, but I haven't got the... Not the energy as much as I haven't got the... Can't take the meetings anymore. that you require to be a comedy writer. And I don't, and I'm not crazy about, I'll be honest with you, there's no time. If you look at Don't Wait Up, for instance, I had long scenes and you could develop emotions. Don't forget, it was about divorce, so it was a comedy, but there were scenes that were serious. What they want now are laughs, every, you know, ticks on every page. When Jonathan Lynn and I wrote On the Buses, Ronnie Wolfe and Ronnie Chesley would send our the scripts back with ticks there where they thought there were laughs, and we'd send them back and say, well, we think there's ticks here too, you know. I wrote very much situation comedy, comedy coming out of a situation. So you'd have a scene with Tony Britton and Nigel Haber's father and son, very emotional, but then you'd undercut it and then get the biggest belty because you got your payoff because you worked for it. Now, I wrote a sequel to Don't Wait Up. I didn't want to, but I did a pilot. And I could tell it wasn't going to work because I could tell when we did these read-throughs and tryouts, they were looking for gags. It wasn't my style. The style's changed. And I like air. I like air in a scene. And a scene to be longer than 4 or 5 pages. More, you know, now you're lucky to get a scene of 2 pages, 3 pages, and it's too rapid for me. So styles have changed. You know, that's not said. I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm addicted to it. Love it.
Okay.
All right.
Nice to see you.
Hello, sailor.
Who the bloody hell's this?
Yeah, don't worry. Look, this is your man.
£800 for a ride in this? We're only hiring it, you know, not buying it.
I'm taking a notice. It's all right.
Is that lot with you?
Oh, my God.
Oh, I might have guessed. Come on.
And recently I've been watching a lot of Tales of the Unexpected. That's not comedy necessarily. Maybe a bit black comedy, on Sky Arts. Now, some, not big, but some are stunning. You know, this construction, the time, you know, it's only, what, 23 or 24 minutes, but you know, and I like to see credits that you can read. You know, I'm a bit old-fashioned. I've become an old fuddy-duddy. So, but what am I going to do in the future? I am going to write more, having walked away from it. I'm very much impressed by, on Twitter, a lot of people say, when are you going to write your autobiography? I'm waiting for it. Well, in a way, the blog is a pre-autobiography. I think there are things in the blog that are there to be used if I ever do it, to be expanded on. Some of the blogs, of course, not. I'm writing about, you know, why didn't they close the borders? Why did it take so long to start lockdown? I've been a little bit political when I felt the need to. But more recently, they are the ones you've read, like the, you know, look after my wife after her operation and making a pig's breakfast of it. You know, a semi-autobiographic book. So I think that's on the cards if I ever get around to doing it. And if I did it, if nothing else, even if it wasn't published, it'd be quite nice to, you know, hand down to the family, wouldn't it?
Definitely.
So, and I've also gone back to an idea I must have had 15 years ago for a book. In fact, my older son, who lives in America, he says, why don't you write that? I'm not going to say what it is, but why don't you write that? He says, it's such a good idea. I said, oh, just lost the will to write. Well, now I've got back to writing. I am seriously thinking about this book, which is a neat idea, but it needs a lot more work and a lot more sort of inspiration. Not inspiration, you know, get the ideas. I mean, I wrote an autobiography, at least I know what I'm going to be writing about. I've got the plot. Yes. But I think if there's anything come out of lockdown for me or pandemic, then one thing is that I've started getting a bit more of a work ethic back. Which, I got so disillusioned with writing. I mean, I tell you what happened. I think I've written about this. I went to a meeting. Two things. One, they said, well, we don't need this scene, we don't need that scene. And obviously, that is one of the funniest scenes I've ever written. And they said, well, it doesn't carry the story forward. As it happens, I think it did. I just knew. And I thought, I can't stand this. And then my wife would say, well, how did the meeting go? You know, I say, I don't know what they were talking about. I have no idea what they're talking about. And then one day I just suddenly said, that is it. I'm not doing it anymore. God. And I've done that with acting degree. I mean, I've been approached about, let's say it's a student film, and you get a little idea of a script, and you think, well, nice, no money in it, but yeah, it'd be nice to do it. You know, and I, or so, or a little film, there's no money in it, particularly, maybe 100 quid expenses. And you've done an audition, you think, I could not do this any better. If I don't get this, I'm giving up. I remember one particular thing. It was about very reflective of my own life because it was about a refugee, an old refugee. And I did this audition to camera, and I thought, God, this is terrific. I felt it was good. They were in tears. I was in tears. If I don't get this, I'm giving up. And I didn't get it. Never heard a word, actually. And I think, well, what's the point? It's making me so unhappy. I like it when I get offered a job, you know. I think the last casualty I did, it was just an offer. Would you like to be in it? Lovely. Thank you very much. I'll be there. And I love working. I really enjoy it. I love working with other actors. I love working with directors. I love meeting people. This student thing. I did this, met this student about doing this film. I met at the National Theatre, had a coffee and gave him my thoughts, what I'd like to do with it. I said, well, what do you do? Just, you know, if it doesn't work out, just text me. Just let me know what you want to do. Never heard another word. Never heard a word. He said, well, if you can't text, say, look, George, I don't think it's going to, or you're not quite right, or not, that's fine. But I don't know. So you get a bit embittered. I don't want to be. I'm not a chippy person, actually. I'm coming across as chippy now, aren't I?
No, it's, I mean,
It's just good manners. So there's two things. I don't like the fact that it's the drama and comedy are so short and sharp. There's no, I like more air to develop relationships and scenes and emotions. So that seems to have gone a bit down the pan. And I think, you know, when you, this self-taping and you never get a reply, you know, just a bloody reply to war and say, sorry, it's not worked out. You just know where you are anymore. So I regret this. I always say when I'm going to interview, I don't get chippy. I don't get a bit bad tempered because I just think it's, we did have some great days in TV and in film and in theatre.
I've got one very quick question left for you, just to, if you don't mind. There's a line in one of the episodes where you say, don't be such an old worry guts. And I was wondering, did you come up with that? Is that a Bradford phrase or a...
Well, I haven't a clue. I don't remember saying it. It's an expression I've used. It is a northern phrase, I would have thought. But I've no idea. Let's give it to the writer. If I'd been a London-based Cockney character, I doubt they would have used that expression. Exactly. So maybe I did.
Yeah.
Maybe I did. Or maybe the writer thought, oh, good, George is playing Northern, or maybe he's a Northern writer. Who are all the writers? There's Leon, what's his name?
Leon Griffiths.
Leon Griffiths. He was the main writer, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
It was his idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are the other writers? I'm trying to think now.
Ian Sharp and Andrew Payne.
Oh, I knew Ian Sharp. Mm. Yes, I knew Ian Sharp very well, actually. He was nice. I liked him. Very nice. And he was a director as well, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. I can't remember. Andrew somebody.
Andrew Payne. Too.
Andrew Payne, yes. He was my agent, actually. My writing agent. Yeah, you're very knowledgeable. Are you a Minder fan? Has this come about because you're a Minder fan? Yes. Or is you just part of the group?
Yeah, this is just like a personal...
You want to know how I got this sold? Because I didn't try hard, that's why. It just happened. Mm-hmm. I wrote the first story, one of the stories in this book, I wrote, it's called The Gang Art. I wrote my first term at drama school as a hobby. And I sold it to BBC and recorded it for Morning Story. That's it. They're all written for radio. Well, then I used it as an audition piece for Woman's Hour as a reader. And she said, oh, that's a nice story. You know, I said, I wrote it. She said, we'll write four more. We'll do it as a serial on Woman's Hour. So over a period of time and a bit of nagging, I wrote another four. So that was a Monday to Friday Woman's Hour serial. The response was amazing. So they commissioned another five. So there's my 10 stories for the first book. And then they were picked up by Schools Radio. It's about childhood. It's all about childhood. The narrator is a young 8-year-old, 9-year-old lad. And there's no he says or I said or mum said. It's all written like a radio play, you see. And I was creating work for myself as an actor because I wrote them all. I read them all. And then they were picked up on Spoon's Radio, and then they were been on Five Live, used to be called Radio 5. They were on that twice. I wrote two more books. They've never been on the radio. The Swap and The Trick have never been on the radio. Unbelievable. The Fib have been on the radio about 4 times. And we're very, and The Fib is not the best book even now. That's the one that's been in print. But it's quite a classic because it's The Fib is about a kid who tells a fib that his uncle's Bobby Charlton. Right? Have you not read it?
No.
I think you better go on Amazon, order yourself a copy. I tell you something, I always say it's cheaper than a Big Mac and a filthy drink. So I think it's now, I don't know what the price is, $7.99, I don't know. Or you can download it. No, buy the book. It's much better than me. Anyway, or you can get the audio version. You know, and it's gone on like that. And I'm very proud of it. I'm really proud. It's on the national curriculum. So I'm published by Macmillan Children's, but it was aimed at adults. It's aimed at your grandparents and your parents and you now. And it, for people of the 50s, it gives a little taste of what it was. You know, this pre-internet, pre-video. TV was hardly born. You know. So I'm very proud of it, actually. I think they're fantastic.
I'll definitely read it. And also want to read...
I'd love you to. And then please send me an email or go on my blog and leave a comment or tweet me.
Oh, look who's here. Esther Williams.
How about that, then?
That's handy, isn't it? A pair of jeans you can wear over your shoulder.
No. Have a look.
Oh, jeans with no legs, yeah, that'd go down a bum.
His handbag.
Hey. Hello, it looks like a fly zip, this.
That's a gimmick, see?
That's very tasteful.
Yeah, don't put your hand in it. Don't know what the purse is like.
Nice bit of denim, though.
I wouldn't mind a pair of jeans made out of that. Don't flare up.
God, what a smile.
So that was George Layton, and that concludes our interview. So next time there will be a new guest, and don't forget also you can suggest guests. There's actually quite a few already lined up for interviews, very exciting ones too, which I'd like to mention,
but won't do just yet. But trust me, they're good ones. Obviously, I have a wants list, and then pretty much the wants list is probably every actor that was ever in the show, to be honest, who's still alive. But there are obviously some who are either more famous, but also ones in particular who I think were in extremely good episodes, and they may have only been in one episode, but it was either one of the best or their performance was simply standout. And I think there's probably, in all honesty, 50 people that belong in that category. So one listener, actually, Mark, thank you Mark for writing, pointed out a similar podcast or a similar idea, which is the Bill podcast, which I didn't know about and is very similar. The host of that show is obviously doing the same thing as me. So if you look at that, for instance, it's very much what we'll have here, with dedicated episodes to various things that relate to the show, as well as obviously different guests who appeared on the show. So that's what you have to look forward to in the future. Please keep listening. Look forward to the next episode, because it's going to be quite different to this one. That's all I'll tell you for now. Don't forget you can write to winchesterclub@minderpodcast.co.uk with suggestions, or just leave a comment on the website. And don't forget to check out minder.org, the best Minder website online. Thanks for listening.